This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
And welcome to the Billboard Chart Free Podcast. Gary Trust, Billboard Senior Director of Charts.
And hey guys, it's Trevor Anderson, a chart manager here at Billboard.
And third voice in and a third chart manager at Billboard.
It's Eric Frankenberg. I'm the box score touring chart manager at Billboard.
All right, we're going to be talking touring this week on the Billboard Chart Free Podcast. Back from vacations a little bit. I was on Cape Cod for a week eating the most nutritious food known to people, fried whole belly clams. Trevor, you were in England, right?
Celebrating from afar. Always when I'm over there, try to get a little sense of what's happening in the UK. And Glastonbury, you know, is right there at the end of June, a huge festival that they have out in the country over there. And I guess most things really, obviously the things that are, you know, dominating the worldwide sphere have made their way over there. Obviously Old Town Road is a huge thing. When I was over there last time a couple years ago, like it felt like Bodak Yellow didn't quite catch on, but Cardi B's like now certainly become a thing. Still probably on the reverse trend, somebody who has not made their way across the Atlantic successfully. Stormzy, Skepta, I mean, they were huge still in 2017 last time I was there. Now still there, I think Stormzy, I believe, was the one who headlined Glastonbury. So that's, you know, almost six figures in terms of the crowd size, but still, you know, that grime did not make its way.
I was going to say, I feel across. Like we've been talking about this for a little bit, that it's been a big thing over there and still
yeah,
waiting for that
it's
breakthrough.
It's one of the few, it's kind of gotten stonewalled. I mean, every other genre has kind of made its way, you know, around the world and into the States, but that one is really, really, really having a hard time getting past customs.
It seemed like at one point Kanye and Drake were giving grime enough cosigns that it was going to push over the edge, but I guess it just didn't quite.
And I wonder if, because sometimes Twitter, you know, has this little jokes and kind of things. And there's something, I guess, about like hearing, like, I guess because America's the home of hip hop and, you know, it really is a homegrown genre here in the States, that maybe there's something about the type of, you know, even the type of voice that you expect on a hip hop track for the longest time. It's been like, you know, a pretty deep voice, like, a very masculine voice or whatever. And so I wonder, like, some people wonder if that, like, our stereotypes sort of make it hard to, like, hear a British, like, voice, like, over a hip hop beat. And if that just sort of makes you pause and you don't really, like, take it seriously or you can't quite understand everything with the accent. Because I think definitely, like, you know, here's a piece of, like a Skepta song.
Like a bullet from a gun, it burns. When you realize she was never your girl, it was just your turn. You gotta face your demons, don't matter how much money you earn.
Like, you can definitely hear, you know, that's 100% British. And maybe some people just think that that's a hard thing, you know, for American audiences to sort of wrap their head around when you hear hip hop beat and not sort of a hip hop voice with it. Anyway, that's just, you know, that's my takeaway from what I learned on my summer vacation. So yeah, still wonder. I mean, feels like, of course, this time, if it hasn't crossed over now, I don't know how grime will make it, but Yeah, feels like that's one ship the U.S. did not get on board with.
All right. This week, we're going to recap, as always, the Billboard Hot 100. Big news on the Hot 100 with Old Town Road. It's getting towards the record. So we'll talk about that history that feels like it's right on the horizon. New song debuts in the top 10. Some interesting songs on other charts as well. And Eric, you're going to run down all things touring related. It's time for Billboard's mid-year touring charts. So we're going to get into who's ruling summer stages, who's been big for the first half of the year, and we'll just get into everything about tours. So we're also going to recap some shows that we've seen as well recently. So it's all coming up right now, this week's top 10 on the Billboard Hot 100.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2. One.
Number 10.
Huh? Packing the mail, it's gone. She like I smell cologne. Yeah. I just signed a deal, I'm on. Yeah, yeah. I go where I want, good. Good. Play if you want, let's do it. Huh. I'm a young CEO, sure. Yeah, yeah.
Number 9.
Then you're left in the dust. Unless I stuck by you. You're a sunflower. I think your love would be too much. Or you'd be left in the dust.
Number 8.
I'm a sucker.
Number 7.
Fresh photos with the bomb lighting. New man on the Minnesota Vikings. True hearts needed something more exciting. Bum bum be dum be dum bum be. You tried to break my heart. Oh, that breaks my heart.
Number 6.
Cause I don't care when I'm with my baby, yeah. All the bad things disappear. You're making me feel that maybe I am somebody. I can deal with the bad nights.
Number 5.
I love it when you call me senorita. I wish I could pretend I didn't need ya. But every touch is ooh la la la. It's true la la la. Ooh, I should be running. Ooh, you know I love it when you call me senorita.
Number 4.
Can we just talk? Can we just talk about where we're going? Before we get
Number 3.
I want you out of my head. I want you out of my bedroom tonight. There's no way I can save you. Cause I need to be saved too. I'm no good at goodbyes. We're both acting insane. But
Number 2.
I'm that bad type. Make your mama sad type. Make your girlfriend mad type. Might seduce your dad type. I'm the bad guy.
And number 1.
Yeah, I'm gonna take my horse to the Old Town Road. I'm gonna ride till I can't no more. I'm gonna take my horse to the Old Town Road. I'm gonna ride till I can't no more.
I got the horses in the back.
Yo, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. We're at 15 weeks of Old Town Road being at number 1. Lil Nas X, Billy Ray Cyrus still holding strong atop the chart. If you are a lamb, if you are a believer, if you are a whatever they call fans of Boys to Men, Daddy Yankee, and or Luis Fonsi, you are probably a little bit nervous because, yes, Old Town Road is just 1 week away from tying the all-time record for most weeks at number 1 here on the Billboard Hot 100. I mean, who would have thought the first time we came across Old Town Road, who knew we had a future potential record tying, maybe still even record setting hit in our midst? Looks like Justin Bieber, who actually co-holds this record with the song Despacito from 2017. He's back out with the remix of the song Bad Guy by Billie Eilish that actually came out last Thursday. Maybe somebody had some mistiming there. So, but really the full impact of it's going to come on next week's chart. That might be the one and only thing that could stop Old Town Road from making it a nice sweet 16 at number one.
Yeah, I think with how big of an event Old Town Road has become, I think we need an event to overtake it. And I thought maybe Justin Bieber being on the Bad Guy remix would be something that kind of took over on social media and everyone would be sharing it and it would, via word of mouth, catapult itself to number one. And I haven't really seen that momentum. I'm sure Beliebers are going crazy listening to it, but has it reached, you know, the kind of cultural consciousness that Old Town Road has occupied for the last many months?
If there were an official video, that might have helped.
Maybe.
Things. Although that picture, obviously, of a younger Billie Eilish and her Bieber fandom when she was younger has had some buzz. But maybe lack of video is going to hurt things a little bit. Yeah.
What'll also be kind of weird is, a lot of people have been kind of tracking what Old Town Road has been able to block out of the way. We've seen two Taylor Swift songs settle for number two. We've seen two Shawn Mendes songs settle for number two so far. And depending on how the credit goes next week for Bad Guy, we may see two Justin Bieber songs have to settle for number two as well. And who would have thought, you know, at any point in 2019 that those three acts would, go 0-6 trying to get to number one?
Yeah, I think as each week, as each new superstar unveiled a new song and we thought, okay, maybe this is the one that's going to do it, and then it continued to not happen, I think you need to calm down. The second Taylor Swift single was the last time that I really thought, okay, this is going to be it. And she did the rollout. She handled the rollout very well. It was a song that was timely during Pride Month. She had a music video that was so star-studded, so many cameos. She had a lot going on. Obviously, Taylor Swift is one of the biggest stars on the planet, and the idea of her having a new album coming out usually sends the early singles to number one. And when that didn't happen, it kind of felt like, okay, this maybe the record's going to be broken this time by Old Town Road.
One thing I'm thinking is for so long, for over 20 years, for 21 years, once Sweet Day had the record, it almost kind of seemed like this might be a totally unbreakable record. And now it's looking like just in the last 2 years, we might have two 16-week number ones. So hasn't even happened yet. Old Town Road hasn't tied or broken the record. But maybe that means with the way streaming now can keep a song at number one, because songs that are that big get such huge numbers, it just solidifies their standing at number one. Maybe this is something we're going to keep seeing, and not to minimize the absolute pop culture impacts that Despacito and now Old Town Road have had. They've just taken over like very few songs historically ever have. But if this has now happened a couple times in the last 2 years, maybe this is going to happen again next year or a year from now, and something's going to keep having this type of meme impact and just totally control pop culture that – even before the record might be broken, I'm already looking at what else might break it after that. But maybe that's where we're headed chart-wise going forward, at least as streaming is the dominant metric on the Hot 100.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny because I think for a minute there, and you know, I'm sure maybe other people who are smarter than me didn't realize this, sort of the conversation about streaming became, you know, you can stream so many songs so quickly that it was more like a case of, you know, like a new song coming along every day and sort of becoming the new conversation. So nothing really felt like it was going to be able to reign for something quite that long. It was just, you know, as soon as every 3 weeks it's okay, now there's a new Rihanna song, or now there's four new Justin Bieber songs, or now there's two new Drake songs, and no one was going to sort of have that pure stranglehold just because of the way timing and release strategies and everything worked. And it's funny now that, yeah, like the flip side of that is, you know, streaming, I mean, it's, just so many of these songs can stream for so long and never really go away. And I think whether it's just different audiences finding out about it, people listening on playlists and, you know, sort of getting it curated for them in that way. I mean, yeah, that's something that's kind of crazy, is like the, I don't say the sort of the stagnancy of streaming, but kind of to that effect that, you know, people thought it was going to just be quick. And really, yeah, I mean, you look even like a song like Sunflower still in the top 10 for Post Malone. 30 weeks in, the song came out in October. People still like eating that up, just, you know, not backing off of it, just inch by inch by inch. So, kind of cool to see.
All right. So one song we thought that might have had a chance this week, the latest one we thought that could come in brand new and make enough of a splash that it maybe had a chance to be number one, debuts at number three. That's Post Malone and Young Thug, new at number three with Goodbyes. So really good debut, but number two in streams, number two in sales, behind Old Town Road, which is number one in both metrics. So, yeah, add that to the list. Not the next number two at the moment, but number three. And again, that points to Bad Guy, which had a little bit of a bump because of those last few hours of the Bad Guy remix that came out for the tracking week for this chart. So still a good debut, but just sort of feels like it pales in comparison to everything going on with Old Town Road. Post Malone, the artist, has the big debut. Post Malone, the song, is a hit as well.
Tonight we go all night long. We party like Post Malone.
Yeah, that's that's the impact of Post Malone in 2019. That, you know, anything with his name just turns to gold.
It's a song that Sam Felt on the Hot Dance Electronic Songs chart. It's called Post Malone. So Post Malone, the artist and song, doing well. Also, Beyond the Hot 100, number one on the Kid Digital Song Sales chart.
Whoa.
King is out tomorrow as this posts, so this Friday, and that song by Beyonce, number one on that chart, Spirit. Also, this song from the same soundtrack debuts number five.
Can you feel the love tonight? The peace the evening brings. The world for once in perfect harmony. With all its living things.
So that's Beyonce, Donald Glover, Billy Eichner, not Billie Eilish, Billy Eichner, and Seth Rogen with the new version of Can You Feel the Love Tonight, originally number four Hot 100 hit by Elton John back in 1994. So Trevor, why am I so excited that that song's out? Beyonce and Donald Glover together?
You're still writing.
I finally get to actually time into the song. What do you call Eric, Beyonce, Donald Glover?
Oh, get ready for this. Think long. Think very Geary.
I'm struggling. I'm trying to think of a pun that ties Beyonce with either Childish Gambino or his Destiny's Child part of it. I don't know.
Ooh, you just said it. So close.
Put it all together.
Oh, Destiny's Childish Gambino.
There you go.
It's like a Wheel of Fortune puzzle, you know? Like,
I'm just excited to hear someone else say it other than me. All right. Other than... hearing bad puns and being very polite about them. Eric, you're here to talk to us this week. So this is a big point for you in the year, mid-year charts. What have you been busy with?
Yeah, we in the magazine this week and online, we have the top 10 tours, the top 10 box scores, the top 10 venues of different capacity ranges, and the top 10 promoters of the first half of the 2019 tracking year for Billboard box score. So far, Elton John has the number one tour. Between November and the end of April, he grossed $100 million, just over $100 million, with his farewell tour. It began last September, and I think it's going through or is scheduled to go through. It's going to end some point in 2021. So he could be on many more recaps to come in the next few years.
I'm still standing.
What a year he's having, though, when you consider that.
Yeah,
consider
the Rocketman
movie, The Lion King back. He was such a big part of the original Lion King. It's all kind of coming together at once.
Kind of timing perfectly to, all of just his talent as a songwriter and as a pianist. He's playing in Europe right now throughout the summer, and then I think he'll be back in the States at some point next year. I'm sure at some point he's going to Asia. I think he's going to be everywhere and anywhere. So I'm excited to see where that goes. I think if we include September's grosses and October's grosses from when the tour started, we're around $130 or $40 million. So this could end up being, part of an all-time discussion by the time the tour's over.
I'm in love with the shape of you. We push and pull like a magnet.
Speaking of the all-time discussion, Ed Sheeran's The Divide Tour has been going for about 2.5 years. It just became the second tour in the history of Billboard Box Score to gross over $700 million. That is a really lot of money. The highest grossing tour of all time in our records is U2's 360 tour. That was in 2009. It ran through 2011, and that grossed $736 million. So Ed is actually pretty close to breaking the record. He's only touring through the end of August, so it may be a nail-biter down to the last date, but And
these are like, these are like hard numbers, like not like inflation adjusted or anything like that.
This is hard grosses. So yeah, if you consider inflation, you know, I'd have to look at the ticket count numbers if he's also, you know, as close to U2 as he is in grosses. But regardless, it's a pretty impressive haul that he's had over the last 2.5 years touring behind Divide.
Does that surprise you in the sense that if you're going to compare it to U2, you said it was 2009 to 2011. That was, what, over 25 years into U2's career at that point. So they're touring behind just decades of hits. Ed Sheeran's doing this not even a decade into his career, and he sounds like he's, you know, very possibly about to break the record. Does that surprise you that he's been able to do that in such a quicker time span?
It's very, very impressive. It's even impressive the fact that he's playing stadiums on his third album cycle, his third proper album cycle. And I think it's even more impressive and surprising to me, and I would imagine many other people feel the same way, just because his music is so quiet. And not only is his music quiet, but his show is really quiet. I think we talked about this last time when I was here that, you know, he's just up there with a guitar and a pedal and nothing else. And you see Taylor Swift with all of the production that she has, and Beyonce with all of the backing dancers and the band that she has. And, you know, you expect a tour like that to be up for an all-time record, not just a guy in the middle of a stage singing some upbeat songs, but a lot of slower, you know, acoustic songs.
So not everything Ed Sheeran does is actually quiet. It's a song from the new album that was just released Friday, Blow, with Chris Stapleton and Bruno Mars. That rocks. We thought maybe Ed Sheeran couldn't do that maybe anymore. This song is really, really loud for Ed Sheeran.
It is. He's a real rock artist. He's on the rock charts now at Billboard. And who knows, maybe his next tour will incorporate some bigger sounds, bigger production. Who knows?
But hard to believe he found the time to record this album while doing all this touring. Like,
the good thing about
the guy's working.
Yeah. No, he definitely is. The good thing about playing stadiums is that you don't necessarily need to be doing like 3 or 4 shows a week. You're maybe only hitting the major markets in whatever continent you're in. So you can kind of work in your days off. Not to say that he's, you know, not incredibly hardworking, but you can.
But the demand maybe, like, it's not sort of back-to-back-to-back nights where it's just, you know, you're rushed off stage and then you're hitting the recording booth and not getting home till 3 a.m. and, you know, rinse, repeat. Okay. All right, Ed, I take it back.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This Mother's Day, treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their advanced eye care duo brightens and firms skin around your eyes, while the Golden Glow Body Trio nourishes and smooths skin all over. Go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM for 10% off your first order site-wide.
You'll mention the other acts, but there's a couple that sort of stood out to me. And I want to ask you about if you thought that these are typical to see on a list like this. So again, these are the biggest mid-year tours from November 1st, 2018 through the end of April. One of them is Trans-Siberian Orchestra. And if you just heard that, you might think, yeah, that's kind of weird. But the time frame, I think, plays into it. And also from what I know, I've never seen them in concert, but from what I know, it's a total rock event to see this act in concert.
Yeah, I've never seen it either. But to me, it almost feels like a niche kind of tour. It feels very family oriented. Obviously, it's seasonal. It plays every year. They play every year in November and December. The trick about Trans-Siberian Orchestra is that they actually have two touring bands. They have an East Coast band and a West Coast band, and they'll be doing, you know, two shows a day in New York and then two the next day in Boston, but at the same time they're doing two in LA and two in San Francisco. Oh. So they actually played 89 shows between November 14th and December 30th, which is about, I don't know, 50 days or so, 45 days. So they're able to really kind of maximize the holiday season. And they've actually been, if we look at that same time frame, November to April, this is the third year in a row that they've been in the top 10. So they're actually a very consistent touring entity. And whether you think it's cheating or not that they have two bands on the road at the same time, it's working for them. I was, when you had mentioned that you were curious about them, I looked up their history in our system, in our database. They have a career gross of $485 million. They've sold over 10 million tickets. So I guess when the mid-year charts roll around next year, you may not be too surprised to see them there again.
Yeah. And every holiday season, they're a big holiday hit, Christmas Eve, Sarajevo. It's a huge hit every year. And you wouldn't necessarily, again, maybe think of it top of mind. But when you hear the song every year on the holidays, it's become a modern classic.
Yeah. It's kind of like, I mean, we, you know, on our mid-year charts, we, or on all of our box score charts, really, we only include music acts, bands, and solo artists, as well as comedians. But the Trans-Siberian Orchestra, it kind of reminds me of the Radio City Christmas Spectacular that also plays every year, you know, more than one show a day, at least on the weekends, and does crazy, crazy business.
The other act that I guess just surprised me because obviously he's a huge name, but to think maybe top tours of the year, Bob Seger is on this list.
Yeah, Bob Seger is actually one of three tours in the top 10 that is a farewell tour for the artist, Elton John, who we talked about at number one. Kiss is at number five with what they're calling for now, at least their farewell tour. Who knows? They feel like one of those bands that has done it many times. Next year, Ozzy Osbourne will be on the road doing his farewell tour. Slayer is saying goodbye. So I think people are, you know, jumping at the chance to see these artists one last time. And yeah, that has played very well for Bob Seger.
Let's want to talk about one thing. I see Travis Scott coming in number six as the top hip hop tour of this period, beating out Drake actually, who comes in at number nine. So obviously, people, you know, it's well known hip hop is the top consumed genre in terms of sales and streams. What is hip hop's relationship with touring like? I mean, are those sales and streams translating, you know, only to really the top artists, or are hip hop tours up and down the bill really starting to get a lift from all this extra consumption?
No, there's a lift. I mean, I think there's touring maybe is just a couple years behind all of it, because you have to get to the point where people are willing to pay, especially in arenas or stadiums even, you have to get to the point where people are willing to pay $80 or $100 for a ticket, not just click on your song on a streaming service. You know, I think 5, 7, 10 years ago, there were only a handful of hip-hop acts that could handle a tour the size of Travis Scott's. And, you know, this year we have two in the top 10, Travis Scott and Drake, and we also, you know, Juice WRLD has been touring in kind of scaled down arenas, big theaters size. We've also seen Childish Gambino, Post Malone. That's just in the last 6 months. So now I think we're at the point where, because hip hop is the dominant genre in streaming and sales and really across the industry as a whole, the touring industry is catching up, and we're seeing the box score charts reflect that.
All right, so those are the mid-year charts in print this week in Billboard on billboard.com Thursday, right? They're posting on billboard.com when this podcast posts. So moving forward to summer shows so far, here we are in mid-July. So you've already got a good stable of shows that have come in, have been reporting. We had you here last time, Eric. We talked BTS. What good news can you give the ARMY about BTS's latest tour numbers?
I can give them incredible news. We've continued doing these monthly box score reports, and you know, next week we're going to have the June numbers out. But for May, BTS had the biggest tour of the month. They grossed over $50 million in May, and they'll certainly be on the June charts as well because they played a few dates internationally. But it's pretty incredible. They're a Korean language 7-piece boy band, and they sold out 6 stadiums in the U.S., 2 in Brazil, and then a handful in Europe. Altogether, I think it grossed about almost $80 million. And that's in, you know, just playing Saturdays and Sundays for about a month. That's very good business. They're playing some dates in Asia this month, and they're playing in October, I believe, in Saudi Arabia and South Korea. So I imagine those numbers are going to be just as big, you know, especially as they go home to play. I think they'll be back on top of our charts, or if not on the top, close to it.
So Saudi Arabia's show is on, because I know Nicki Minaj recently had to, or recently chose to cancel her show after, you know, a lot of her fans sort of wanted to make her aware of some of the human rights abuses that are alleged going on in Saudi Arabia. As far as we know, BTS is still contracted to play.
As far as I know, I was on their website minutes before we came down to record this, and it's listed there. So
maybe it only usually comes up as that date gets closer and people sort of realize that's the next stop on the tour. But I'd be really interested if the fans didn't sort of, you know, try to rally attention and get the boys to back out of that date, just given everything that's going on. And there's been I'm a tennis fan. There was a tennis match that was supposed to happen between like Nadal and Djokovic that got canceled because it's not just music. I mean, it's any sort of entertainment. People are really making an active effort to get these major stars not to do any events there.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, and BTS seemed to be self-aware of a lot of kind of political issues around the world. They spoke at the UN. They've had a lot of positive messaging, just, you know, in the sense of encouraging their fans to be themselves. And they, you know, want the best for their fans. And it wouldn't surprise me if they're turned away by, you know, kind of bad practices on that side of the world.
I guess sort of on the flip side of that, too. Even just the places you were naming, because obviously we know BTS is a Korean, East Asian phenomenon. We've seen it here in the U.S., but I guess for people who may not realize just how deeply global the impact is, I mean, you're mentioning Brazil. I mean, the fact that they're in demand in Saudi Arabia, you know, is not a place I would have ever, you know, really thought, you know, that BTS would have a huge market for. So, you know, if you didn't realize that this was, you know, not just a U.S., Korea, you know, kind of England, Western world phenomenon, this is a truly, truly global thing. That's crazy.
Definitely. And, I mean, we've seen it as well with GOT7, Blackpink. They're starting to be just as global as BTS. They're not necessarily playing stadiums here, but they are playing sold-out arenas. So it's no longer just kind of a one-off. It's a full genre takeover.
Something that might have been, maybe unexpected before this year, but considering we'll start to get into some other nostalgia shows, but Spice Girls have had one of the biggest stadium tours of summer 2019.
Yeah, and that was a pretty confined tour. They did 13 dates, and it was all in England, Scotland, Ireland, and Wales. They haven't traveled even further throughout Europe or, you know, let alone the U.S. or South America or anywhere else. And they still were able to gross about $78 million from 13 shows.
Nice work if you can get it. Wow.
Pretty crazy numbers. There's only four of them on stage. Posh Spice isn't there. So even a better split of the money, of the profits for the four Spices left standing. But incredible business, even bigger than the reunion tour that they did in 2007, 2008. Similar business, but even better this time around. So I think some fans around the world are still waiting to see if they're going to expand the tour and travel elsewhere, go to Asia, go to the U.S., what have you. But even if it's just that European tour, it's a pretty good year for the Spice Girls.
Well, they reunited a couple times since, like, I think at the Olympics,
right?
The 2012 Olympics, and then maybe I think like the musical or something opened in London, Viva Spice Girls, so... Yeah, I haven't seen too much of them this decade. A
couple appearances, this was the first time you could pay to see them together, and a lot of people did. They averaged $6 million a night, over 50,000 tickets per show. So,
yeah, we had the Rua Pop Family Pop Trio on the podcast a few weeks ago at this point, and they were touring. They were opening for Westlife in London, and Alana, one of the members, she was saying how it was the biggest thing in the world for them to be opening for Westlife, but she was wondering how one of those nights she was going to make it cross town to see Spice Girls after they did their opening set. So even the other artists who were touring the same night, if you grew up with the Spice Girls back then, this is a total event. And I guess that kind of plays into to Elton John we were talking about and Bob Seger. And if you're a little bit younger, Spice Girls, these are acts that haven't had
a little bit younger.
A little bit younger. These are acts that haven't had new hits in years, maybe decades in some cases. It's you're just going to hear the music. It's almost you just want to say, maybe in some ways, maybe for all these years, you've never seen this act. It's kind of one of those things you have to check off the list that, yep, I've seen this person. I've heard all those hits live.
I mean, in the context of the farewell tours that we were talking about earlier, the Spice Girls haven't announced this as a farewell tour, but it may as well be. You know, who knows the next time they're going to tour. So, yeah, this is your opportunity if you're a fan to see them. Just the way that people want to see Elton John one last time or Bob Seger one last time.
I mean, yeah, Gary, that point is always – it's like mind-blowing to me because it's like the Spice Girls probably are contained like a four-year like period of pop history. Like maybe you would say like 96, 7, 2000, you know. It just – yeah, I mean just like how they like extrapolated that in terms of like massive fan base. And I know – I mean I don't know if it's like kind of part of the 20-year cycle or whatever, because I know like Emma Stone is a huge Spice Girls fan, confessed. We've seen Adele go all crazy for them. So it's like, yeah, for some, like it's interesting because at first I was like, why would 2019 be like a bigger, you know, like why would this 20-year period do better than like the 10-year show 10 years ago? But there's something about it, like, I don't know, just in the cultural water where I guess the people who grew up with the Spice Girls are like old enough to be celebrities now.
If you were a girl growing up in 97, 98, when they were on the Hot 100, then they had a reunion song in 2007. But yeah, confined to 97, 98 on the Hot 100, maybe you were... You know, born in the mid 80s, so now you're in your mid 30s. That's prime ticket buying audience.
Yeah, I mean, and it's not just the Spice Girls. That goes for a lot of the other nostalgia tours that have been huge this year. I know you were recently at the New Kids on the Block show. They're fascinating to me because, you know, they came back in, I think, 2008 after being on hiatus for like 10 or 15 years.
Yeah.
And it's not just one tour that they've been able to get people to come to because, oh, it's your one time to see the New Kids on the Block. They've been touring consistently since then. It's been over 10 years at this point, and they do really well every time.
I saw that show in Boston. So I'm from Boston. New Kids are in Boston. It was the whole mixtape tour with Debbie Gibson and Tiffany. If you listen to this podcast, you know they're friends of the podcast. They've been on multiple times each at this point. Naughty by Nature and Salt and Pepper also on the tour. They got a great response doing their hits. So, yeah, it was really cool shows at TD Garden. They did two nights. I saw the first night recently at the end of June. New Kids come out. They do a bunch of their hits. And then sort of like a mixtape, different acts would sort of sprinkle in. All of a sudden, Tiffany's on stage doing I Think We're Alone Now. And then Debbie Gibson comes out and she's doing her hits. At the end, she did a really nice version of Lost in Your Eyes with Joey McIntyre. So kind of mixed in a little bit. But yeah, it just had a real mixtape feel about it. There's a really cool moment where Donnie Wahlberg went into – not even just out into the floor. He went up into the stands. You know, someone handed him a beer. He just drank some beer from a fan. And then he took the mic. And yeah, I know it's somewhat – it's scripted. They plan to do this. But I thought that he really hit the heart of – and this goes back to BTS too and boy bands – it really hit them how much to be doing a hometown show over 30 years after they broke through. They really seemed like they just couldn't believe how they're still so beloved all these years later. But they said, you know, the key line he said was all the critics who kind of dismissed New Kids' music as frothy pop. He said, they didn't underestimate us. They underestimated you. the fans. And I know that's kind of a fan service way to just get cheers, but it kind of points out to, especially with boy bands, how fans are – they're kind of that extra member of all these bands that you might think that they had this one moment maybe, like we're saying, Spice Girls or New Kids in the late 80s, where these acts – just have maybe a sort of quick run when they're just the biggest thing, but fans remember that. And for female fans who were loving New Kids back then, they take it with them. And that love that fans have, that super fandom, can really just lift a band higher than the critics probably ever expected.
No, it's a cheesy sentiment to an extent, but I kind of buy into it. You know, forever, the bedrock of the box score charts has been classic rock, and a lot of acts from the 70s and 80s who can tour forever on all of their hits, the Rolling Stones, U2, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, now we're getting to the point where, you know, if we're talking about nostalgia going back to the 90s, rock is starting to not be the cultural juggernaut that it was in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and even further in the 2000s and in this decade. You know, there's going to become classic pop, and we're looking at the New Kids on the Block, the Backstreet Boys, the Spice Girls, and, you know, even further when we start getting 10, 15 years from now, it'll be Pink and Beyonce and Britney Spears and et cetera,
no,
et cetera.
Now we're going to go dust off the leotards to go see Beyonce.
I'm not
tonight.
Dusting off anyone. I'm just saying that as time goes on, pop acts are going to kind of take the reins, and I think for a long time, pop was really dismissed on the other side of rock as being kind of frivolous and superficial, and we're seeing that those fans have kind of held up over time. The New Kids on the Block tour also kind of reminds me, even a generation later, B2K has had a lot of success on the road this year, the Millennium Tour. It was B2K, Chingy, the Ying Yang Twins, Mario, Lloyd, Bobby V, and I think there's one, Pretty Ricky. All of them on the same stage, doing way bigger business than any of them did in their prime, you know, around the
Ricky.
Beginning of the 2000s. Yes,
Pretty Ricky. Grind with me, Pretty Ricky. What?
And it's pretty incredible. I mean, part of it is just inflation, as we kind of mentioned before. But I was looking at B2K's tour in 2003. The highest ticket, the most amount of money you could have spent to go see B2K was $40. The cheapest ticket this year was $45.50. Tickets went up to $150 plus. And that's A, inflation, B, their fans now being old enough to really spend, and maybe C, just kind of nostalgia rearing its head and you're wanting to spend that much money to see an act that only cost $40 way back when.
Well, these package deals are – I mean, how great is that? Because I think, you know, sort of one of the complaints that people have about seeing sort of an older act, you know, on a new tour is that, you know, we're going to get four songs that are classics that we all like, and then we're going to sit through, you know, 10 songs from the new album that I'm not really interested in. And when you package these artists together, you kind of, I guess, maybe to some degree to the detriment of the artist, but at least for the fans, I mean, you kind of ensure that it's going to be like a greatest hit set, you know, a greatest hits EP from everybody that, you know, if Chingy only has four songs, you know, he's probably going to play the four songs that you want to hear the most, or B2K, you know. So I think in a way that kind of encourages fans who may not go see these acts sort of solo on their own, even maybe at the same or a similar price point, to at least go now, because you know that if you get these seven people, you're going to get seven hits.
All right. So another thing you've been tracking, Eric, is Vegas residencies. And you saw a couple of these shows last month, right?
Yeah, I was in Vegas at the end of May. I saw Celine Dion at the Coliseum at Caesar's Palace. And that was pretty cool to see because it was her last week or two in Las Vegas after 16 years there. She just wrapped. She grossed over $600 million over her time there. And you know, when I was watching her show and thinking back to when it was announced back in 2003, it really wasn't that safe of a bet. It wasn't very cool to be in Vegas. And Celine was kind of a new beginning for Las Vegas residencies. And it was pretty great to see her at the tail end of that. She's going out on a world tour starting this fall. She sounded as good as ever. There were a bunch of covers in the set. It was a really great performance. And I saw Lady Gaga the following night, doing her Enigma show, also great, and also kind of to the point of those nostalgia tours of, you know, packaging all those artists together and you're only getting the hits. It's kind of similar in Las Vegas. You're seeing probably acts who have a lot more hits than Chingy and Pretty Ricky, no offense to them, but you know,
when they jump you, you'll know why.
The set list for Celine Dion and Lady Gaga, you know, they're not pointed toward a new album where you're hearing all of the deep cuts from that album that they're trying to promote. It's really a full set list of hits. Lady Gaga opened with Just Dance, Poker Face, and Love Game right off of the top. So you just felt like, you know, it was a party vibe. Everyone was there to have fun, enjoy it. I did kind of feel like the crowd at Celine were people who were in Vegas, maybe some high rollers going out for a nice night on the town. People were dressed up at that show. It felt like a nice Vegas theater show. At Gaga's, it seemed to me that people flew to Vegas to see Lady Gaga. It was her fans coming to see that show. I'm sure there were other people who, you know, are there because it's Vegas and it's a fun thing to do. But I think there were a lot of little monsters in the room.
It's kind of wild, too, how I mean, even just in the past couple of years, just the amount of acts and who is now doing these Vegas residencies. I mean, even just here, you got Janet Jackson, you've got Christina Aguilera, you've got Aerosmith, you've got Mariah Carey, you know, trading off at certain dates. You've got Cardi B, I think, is heading that way. I mean, to think that Cardi B, who has not even put out two albums yet, is heading to Vegas. I mean, why are Vegas residencies really like the thing again?
Well, I mean, for Cardi B, it's kind of a midpoint between someone like Celine or Gaga and all of the DJs who set up shop in Vegas, like Zedd and Calvin Harris and Tiesto. They have residencies where they're kind of spinning at nightclubs and they get paid a ton of money. And it's not necessarily – I don't know if people are necessarily paying money. It's not necessarily a ticket to see like a Zedd concert, but more just like a night out at a club, and Zedd happens to be there. I'm not quite sure what the Cardi B or Drake residencies look like, if it's kind of a midpoint between them. But I think on that side of things, Vegas is, you know, a place where people go to party and spend money. So it's not too surprising to me that people have realized that they can really get paid in Vegas. And especially, you know, Cardi's talked about, you know, whether or not she wants to go on tour, how financially profitable it is for her. Maybe Vegas is a place where she can get paid a flat fee and, you know, not have to worry about the production because the casino's going to pay for all of that. And, you know, who knows?
Highlights from both the Gaga and Celine Dion shows. Was there one song from each or one
specific
highlight?
Yes, there has to be.
Highlight?
I think for Celine, well, I'll say for Celine, it probably was My Heart Will Go On. You know, I was like 8 or 9 years old when Titanic came out. That song was so incredibly ubiquitous, and it's the kind of song that I never really thought about seeing live by the original performer, and hearing that intro, that flute, or I don't know what instrument it is playing that introduction song, it was kind of crazy and almost like surreal in a way.
Is the visual tied to Titanic?
Yeah, so the song, it started off by actually, I assume it was recorded and not live, although I'm not sure. But it sounded like a recorded vocal by Celine singing the melody of that introduction, kind of surround sound all around the theater. And obviously everyone was going crazy. And then, you know, the band came in and actually started the song. She was in the middle of the stage, and at a certain point in the middle, she was on a little platform that raised up, and it looked like there was water pouring down all around her, swirling around. So they made the most of that moment, because I think, you know, everyone knows everyone I think would agree that that's the most recognizable, iconic Celine Dion song. So that was definitely a highlight.
In all the good times, I find myself longing for change. And in the bad times, I fear myself.
For Gaga, the encore was Shallow, and that was, you know, I've seen her a couple times. That was the first time I've seen her perform that song since it's brand new.
Did Brad roll through?
Bradley did not come out, unfortunately. I think he's only made it to one of the Vegas shows, or at least made it on stage for one of the Vegas shows. But it feels like, you know, from Joanne, and which had a million reasons, and even going back to You and I and some of the slower songs Gaga's had, it seems like Shallow is finally that kind of stadium ballad that she's been working towards that's really going to stick and, you know, be signature for her.
So who does she do Shallow with? Is she just singing?
She did it all herself. She did Bradley's verse herself. She said, "Tell me something, girl," and all through the end.
Yeah. So you mentioned earlier talking about Gaga when it's the set list is mostly like a lot of the hits. And you said she started out with Just Dance and Poker Face, Love Game. To that point, does she keep the songs pretty faithful and traditional to what they are? Because sometimes, you know, she's really good at turning, you know, high energy songs into, you know, ballads on the piano or something. So does she flip it, things like that, or is it mostly like the way you remember it?
It was pretty true to form. And even some of the times I've seen her before, I've heard The Edge of Glory very slowed down on the piano, or Born This Way is very slowed down on the piano. This was a very high energy pop show. And I think she knows being in Vegas, people are coming for that. There's a lot of production. She started doing Just Dance suspended way above the crowd. She flew in with her guitar. At one point, there's this like giant animatronic robot kind of thing. She was just standing on top of it while performing. So it was all guns blazing, very upbeat, very high energy.
That guitar is going in a museum one day. It has to. I wonder if like it's the same one, because that's low key iconic for Gaga.
Yeah, well, I mean, part of it. The day that I saw Gaga was the first date of this second leg of the residency, and that was also the opening day of this exhibit that they've opened in the Park MGM with a lot of Gaga's iconic outfits and dresses and accessories and all that stuff in glass cases. It's kind of like a museum exhibit, and they would let people go in and out and take photos, and it was really cool to see the meat dresses in there. At one point, Gaga came out during the day and waved and took some pictures and was in there. It was a very cool exhibit, but perhaps at some point they'll add the guitar. Yeah, at some point.
Okay, so to wrap it up, well, we'll leave the future to the future. Let's bring it one last note about the present. Billy Joel is on the cover of this week's Billboard magazine. It's a lot of Billies we've been talking about today. Billy Eichner, Billy Eilish, now Billy Joel. So he has that long-standing residency at New York's Madison Square Garden, played over 50 shows there on like a monthly series basis. So we're celebrating Billy Joel and all his accomplishments with that this week. What is Billy Joel up to? Can you give us some numbers on where Billy stands? Because he's been breaking in a lot of money for a lot of years off that one venue.
He has. He started this residency in January of 2014 and, like you said, has more or less played once a month there. So it's 66 shows total now. The most recent one was July 11th, so I guess that was last Thursday. And so far, the residency itself has grossed $145 million. That's a pretty incredible total at one venue over the course of 5 years. Over the course of his career, Billy Joel has grossed $896 million. He's sold over 13 million tickets. He's among the 20 highest grossing acts in the history of Billboard Box Score. He's done a ton of touring with Elton John, who we were talking about earlier. They are the second highest grossing co-headline pair of all time. Only Beyonce and Jay-Z have topped them, and by a very narrow margin. And actually, Billy Joel's most recent concert that wasn't at Madison Square Garden was at Wembley Stadium on June 22nd. And that was actually the highest grossing one night engagement of his career. So he's not slowing down anytime soon.
I mean, not bad for a guy who hasn't put out an album in 25 years. Yeah. But just goes to show how much, you know, for so many people, his music is really woven into the fabric of their lives. And, you know, there's so many, I guess, different phases of Billy Joel, whether you knew him from 52nd Street or maybe a lot of kids nowadays know We Didn't Start the Fire or even like Tell Her About It or Uptown Girl, some of those more, you know, fun 80s songs. But he's one of those people who really just, you know, I mean, everybody, no matter, you know, where you come from or when you join the Billy Joel train, there's like two or three of those hits that you just know so well and you just can't help but enjoy.
It's hard to think of many other artists who could do what he's doing at Madison Square Garden, even if it's not in New York, maybe it's their own hometown. I can't think of many people who could play for 5 years plus without leaving a single ticket unsold every month. It's pretty incredible.
All right, Billy Joel live, wrapping us up on the Billboard Charity Podcast.
You good? You on? Here we go.
Cruising through Long Island Sound. I have chosen. took on diesel back in my talk yesterday. Left this morning from the bell in Garner's
Bay. Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host
Niñas Bien podcast. We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.